There are three daily habits that are destroying your memories, and you will lose 10% of your brain by the age of 55 and 20% of your brain by the age of 75. It'll actually shrink if you do not do something about this. There is a free workshop that you can partake in where you'll learn what these three habits are, how to fix it, and how to regain your memories. There's a link below in the description on how to sign up. Be sure to sign up. It's free information.
Were you in fear of your life at that point?
Yeah, sure. You know, they didn't have grounds to hold me at that point. But I knew it was just a matter of time that they would find some reason. Yeah.
Okay, so they grabbed their stuff, and you didn't have the Seth Rich files anymore. Now, what happened where you got them again?
So I waited a couple of days, and sure what to do. And I wrote him back and I said, hey, my computer died, which, you know, wasn't exactly true, but I said, hey, my computer died and I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. You know, I'd like to get them on a USB stick. And he said, yeah, sure. So I went and I rented a car. Actually, I had my aunt do it for me. I didn't tell her why. I rented a car on one day. I drove straight to D.C. The only reason I stopped was for gas and, you know, bathroom breaks. I didn't stop for any food. I arrived at 4 in the morning. And I got the USB stick and I drove straight back. I wasn't even gone. I don't think I was gone more than 30 hours.
So how long after that did Seth Rich get murdered?
Oh, it was quite some time. Of course, I didn't know it, you know, because I didn't know who he was. But when I got back, I had the FBI watching. Watching my house, they were watching my dad's house, and they were watching me. They were following me around, and I was like, oh God, I got to get the hell out of here, because, you know, if they were gonna arrest me, they would have put me in Bradshaw's jail, like the sheriff who I really exposed all the really bad stuff about. And you know, they're already on audio talking about it. They were gonna throw me in the cell with like some hardened criminal to be freaking tortured and raped. You know?
Yeah, they would pick the right criminal for you to be with. So now, at this point then, when the FBI was following you around, is that when you decided you needed to get out of the country?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Now how did you go about doing that?
So first I decided to rent a boat, and I was gonna take it to Cuba. And the boat, it was a small, I rented like a little 18-footer, 19-foot boat. And I caught a surveillance team down in Keys watching me. I walked around the marina. It was like 3 in the morning or 2 in the morning. I couldn't sleep because I was cold and I was wet. And I walked around the parking lot, and there was a Suburban or a Tahoe or something there. With the glow of computer equipment in the back, and a guy sitting in there. And as soon as he saw me, he jumped out and he slammed the door, and he didn't look, of course, he didn't look like an FBI agent, but they never do, you know? And, he just started volunteering all this information about, oh yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm waiting here to go on a early morning charter, blah, blah, blah. Very histrionic acting. And I knew that they were watching me, and I knew I had to get the hell out of there. And I knew I couldn't take the boat. So I gave the keys to the boat back to the rental company the next morning, said, yeah, I'm not going to go out. And I stopped at my mom's house in Boca Raton. I got a blonde wig and a pair of blue sunglasses, and I put them in a bag and I left, and I got a change of clothing at my brother's house. And I went to the mall, and I had somebody leave an old vehicle for me that I owned, that I hadn't registered in like 7 years, on the side of the mall. And I went in, I slipped on the out a different exit, and I got in the truck and I just headed north. And I drove all over the U.S. actually, like all over the eastern part of the U.S., trying to figure out how I was going to get out.
So,
So.
you ended up getting asylum in Russia. How did that come about? Did somebody help you do that, or did you? I mean, what happened?
I had come here on a vacation before, and actually, it's a really fascinating city. But basically, what anybody thinks about Russia, is like completely different what they know. And I was blown away my first time here. So I had already had a visa. I already knew a couple of people here, and so when I made it to Moscow, now. I had to. I was on the TSA's no-fly list. I couldn't fly out of the U.S. So I had to sneak into Canada, and I took a flight out of Toronto. And when I went to Moscow, I mean, there's only one girl that I happened to know that I could call, and I said, "Hey, I just landed in Russia. Just landed at Vnukovo Airport, and I don't have anywhere to go. It's a long story. I'm sorry I didn't call you. Like, do you mind if I come crash on your couch?" She's like, "Yeah, sure." So she picked me up at Europiski Mall, and we drove back to her house, and it all hit me. I mean, when I say it all hit me, I was, I had so much. It was such a stressful 3 weeks of trying to escape and run from the FBI. And then, I left my kids. I didn't get to see them Easter Day 2016. I wanted to, but I knew if I went, the FBI would probably be waiting. And I sat on her couch and I broke down sobbing for must have been 2 hours. I hadn't cried since I was a little kid, even when my best friend got killed in the Marine Corps. And it was such an emotional,
The pressure and just
and
everything.
I felt like I lost my entire life, and because I did, I really did.
Did you know Candida yeast overgrowth causes chronic fatigue, digestive issues, lack of focus, poor memory, skin issues, anxiety, depression, and much, much more? There's a free Candida Summit, which is airing July 9th through July 15th, and you will learn all of this, plus how to eliminate it. The link is below to sign up, so why not sign up? It's 100% free, and you will become much healthier by learning this valuable information.
So,
And
and then you decided to apply for an asylum at that point, or?
so it turns out the girl who I knew, her ex-husband was a journalist with Evening Musco, and he was also a former he's Russian, but he served in the U.S. Army. So she introduced me to him, and he said, "Don't worry, John, we're going to help you." And he did. He took me to the immigration department to apply for asylum. And it was really it was a difficult procedure to get asylum. It really was. But eventually I wound up getting political asylum here.
You had to prove to them that you were real and legit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a lot of meat in your story just because you got asylum. Now, How did they treat you through that process? You said it was pretty difficult, but once they started realizing you were legit, I mean, how did they treat you and what happened?
That was pretty interesting, actually. I had TV cameras like following me around, asking me for interviews. It was kind of interesting, you know.
Is it,
And
do you think that
because it just doesn't.
they are using it? I mean, other countries realize the United States is in a different situation right now, and do they use it, people like you getting asylum, as a way to show that the United States is, I mean, we used to give people asylum here in the United States because other countries were, kind of renegade, but the rest of the world probably sees the United States right now in a sad renegade situation, and they use people like you as a way to prove it.
Sometimes, you know, I've never had, I've, so a lot of times the word used is propaganda, right? But propaganda, if you actually look at the definition, it's kind of like the, using misleading facts to prove a point. Everything that they used was 100% factual. And they never did a story on me without saying, okay, you know, make sure that this is correct, and letting me look at the story before, because they wanted to get all the information right. But I think it's getting pretty known here that America is not the land of the free anymore. It just isn't. I mean, honestly, you have a lot more freedom, like as an everyday person. I'm not saying like as a journalist or a politician, but generally speaking, you have a lot more freedom here in Russia than you do in the United States anymore. You only have 150 pages of laws that you got to follow. Where in the US, I mean, you know, they got like 10,000, but
It's endless. Well,
yeah.
okay, let me get back to the Seth Rich files. Okay, at this point you now are in Russia. Did you publish or give the files to anyone before you left the country, or did you just still have them on your hard drive or your disk?
I had them on the USB drive. Yeah, I had hidden the USB drive before I got back to Florida, and then I picked it up again when I was making my escape.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, and then you brought it to Russia with you. And at what point
Yeah.
did those files become public?
Week and a half later,
A week and a half
I made it.
after you got to Russia?
Yeah, maybe 2 weeks. Well, okay, so I got here April 7th, and I set up the website for it on April 19th. So, like 2 weeks, maybe.
Okay, what was the date of Seth Rich's murder? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay, did you learn about his murder after you published the files?
Well, the files were published April 19th, the first batch of files. And actually, I had been in communication with, you know, it wasn't just Seth Rich.
There was a
There was
group.
a whole group. Yeah, there was a whole group of people. Four or five. I set up four or five logins for the server.
Well, so Seth Rich, how do you know he was the one that gave you the file? The NDC.
Because I recognize his photo.
Okay, so you connected that. But then there were other people. Now, did you, so now you knew that Seth Rich was the one that contacted you because you met him in Washington, D.C., but then you learned there's like four or five other people. Now, the four or five other people, you knew there was more of them because of they wanted more logins. Did you ever talk to anybody besides Seth Rich?
There was one guy in particular that I would speak to, and I now this is really weird, and I still don't really know what to make of it. I would check the server logs you know, because I would log administrator logins. So I would look at the server logs just to see like if anybody's trying to gain access or whatnot. And the every they all these guys or girls, I don't know, but all these people, they would use proxies like Tor to log in. One day somebody slipped, they didn't use a proxy. And the IP address came back from Fort Meade, Maryland. And it's an IP address that belongs to the US Cyber Command. And I thought it was a little strange at the time, but I figured maybe, okay, the guy got sloppy and he's a government whistleblower. I don't know. I don't ask questions. You know,
So,
it's not my place.
there's a good possibility that it's a combination of people that work in the DNC and some whistleblowers that
Yeah.
were like actually placed there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very
Yeah.
interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Because the IP goes back to that.
Correct.
Very, that's a very good, that's very
Yeah.
interesting. Okay. The Now, how did WikiLeaks get these files?
Well, so one of the places I was hosting like whistleblower websites was a hosting company called Shinjiru. They're out of Malaysia. And Malaysia has really strong privacy laws. And that's one of the reasons I was using Shinjiru. I don't know that, but I was able to pay for it in Western Union using a fake name. So, you know, I would host a lot of sites, but the downside of using Shinjiru is I don't know if they were using some like 20-year-old server like out of their mom's basement, but it was just so unreliable and it was always beat down. And there was always some kind of issue. And you know, the domain that I had set up on the server was called DC Leaks. And you know, I threw up the first email dump for DC Leaks, and then they took care of all the rest of them.
What do you mean they took care of all the rest of
Well, because I look, I had just
You,
gotten to Russia. I
okay.
didn't have time. I didn't have any money. I said, you know, I'm setting up this server for you. You guys have to, you know, manage it. You guys put your own content on it. So,
Oh,
and that's why I
this is
drifted.
you guys. So you're still talking to the Seth Rich character and the people
Yeah,
at, okay, so you're
I
still communicating with them from Russia.
Yeah,
Okay,
sure was.
excellent. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, so I think maybe May, like late May, maybe early May. I don't remember exactly when. We were having a lot of problems with the server, and you know it kept crashing, and people couldn't get on. And through my past experience working with whistleblower websites, I actually knew a guy in London who had ties to WikiLeaks, and I connected those individuals together.
Okay, so you connected the Seth Rich's group. And now, were you talking to another person at this point or Seth Rich directly? Because you knew who was who.
There were two people I was mainly talking to, and that
Okay.
was Seth and about the guy I think was Seth Rich, and then the guy that I think worked for the US Cyber Command.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And then those two you connected along with whoever was behind them to your contact that knew WikiLeaks.
Correct.
Okay, and then WikiLeaks ended up publishing them. Now, do you know how long after you connected them that the files were published?
No, I don't. Because again, I mean, I just got into Russia. I had no money. I was trying to figure out what I was going to do for work, and I didn't have a lot of time to be spending on it, you know.
At that point, you didn't realize how important this story was or going to be, and you had all
No,
sorts of other
not at
whistleblowers
all.
that you worked with. Okay.
Right.
Now, when did you become aware that this was bigger than you thought?
Oh, God. It was like in December 2016. Like I was reading the news and they were talking about like the Seth Rich murder, and I was like, holy Christ. Like that looks like the guy I met gave me the thumb drive. So, and as far as I think that was quite a while after he had been killed. Interestingly enough, the last I heard from any of them was the very beginning of the month where he got killed. It was like June or July,
So once he got killed, they stopped talking to you.
correct.
So
But
you
I
were.
didn't know why. I thought, okay, well, they'll just get this published on
So they were
WikiLeaks.
talking to you this whole time until he was murdered.
Yeah. I mean, not a
Okay.
lot,
Occasionally.
but
Now, were they trying to get, were you constantly, did you feed him more than that one drive? Were you able to facilitate even
I
more
didn't have it.
information?
No, I didn't have any more than that. That's
Okay,
all I had.
were they able to give them more information?
I don't know.
Why were they talking to you again then after that drive was given to WikiLeaks?
Well, I don't know if. I don't know when they gave it to WikiLeaks, but I had talked to them to June, June or July. I don't remember which one, but I had been talking to them in relation to the server. They asked me to set up a
Okay.
subdomain on the server. So things regarding that nature.
Okay. And they were publishing different things on that server.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I knew, I mean, I wasn't really paying attention to it, but yeah.
Okay. You gave them the platform for them to publish this stuff. Now, did WikiLeaks, the original files that you had, is that the stuff they published, or were they publishing stuff that they were uploading to the server?
Oh, they had a lot. I only had like 700 something emails. I think I had the first batch. And the batch of emails that I had encompassed to, if I remember correctly, March 11th. I think it was March 11th. It was like the last email in the dump that they gave me. So, yeah.
And then they had others that they uploaded to the server, and then WikiLeaks was able to grab all of it.
I guess. I mean, I've actually never picked through the WikiLeaks site, so I don't know.
How long is their server still available?
Which one?
The
The
server
in
that you
Europe?
set up for the Seth Rich and his group.
No.
What
I
happened
never
to
heard back.
that?
Just let it expire.
Okay, so you let it expire, but where are all the data files and things still available, or is it in Malaysia somewhere?
No. You'd have to call the hosting company.
Okay, so the hosting company may have it or may not.
Yeah,
Okay,
I don't know.
but as far as you understand, WikiLeaks grabbed all of it.
I think, yeah, I think they ended up with like 50 something thousand emails at the
Jeez,
end of the day.
okay, yeah.
It's a lot.
Okay, when Seth Rich talked to you, why did he say it was so important to do a whistleblower site? I mean, because he probably gave you his reasoning and you thought he was kind of a crackpot,
Okay,
but.
as a matter of fact, he actually liked Bernie Sanders. And he was not happy what's happening in the DNC with he thought it was very un-American rigging the election in favor of Hillary Clinton instead of letting the people have their choice. He thought it was
Exactly.
very un-American.
Now, is there
I
evidence? Go ahead.
was gonna say I agreed with him. I'm somewhat of a conservative, but I'm also somewhat of a liberal, and I happen to really like Bernie Sanders, and his reasons were very compelling to me. So,
We just didn't think it was, it screwed up our whole country and the meaning of what we do. Was there other information in those emails that he thought were important besides the Bernie Sanders situation?
I don't know.
He didn't tell
I
you.
don't know. There's only so much that you can talk about on Wicker because it's like texting back and forth. I never actually talked to him voice, using voice, except the day I went to DC. You know, I had like a 2 minute, 3 minute conversation with him, and I drove off.
And he didn't give you any more details then.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of
And I
other,
think he could just say,
there was some
but he
more,
didn't look.
go ahead.
He didn't look afraid. Like, I didn't want to tell him that I was raided by the FBI. But he didn't look afraid. He didn't look like, you know, he thought he was being followed. So I figured he didn't know that I had been raided by the FBI.
Do you think you were followed at that point? Do you think that's what tipped off the FBI that Seth Rich was the one that did that?
Don't know. Well,
Because there's a good possibility if they were following you everywhere and just raided you, they could have.
yeah, but I was pretty careful. I was pretty careful about being followed. I don't think they could have followed me. So, but that's not to say that the FBI didn't know anyways. I mean, they got my computers. Who knows what information they had.
Sure. Huh. Okay. And now, after you learned that he died and you were like, oh my God, this is all happening, what did you do at that point?
Nothing.
Nothing. You just kind of became a spectator like the rest of us, trying to learn what was going on.
No, I didn't even do that. I mean, again, I mean, I don't to sound so like self-absorbed, but I mean, in December when I found out, I mean, there was one night I was working like 18-hour days. I thought up a business idea. I got off the metro system, and I was so right. I didn't have the, you know, 50 cents to take the bus to my house, you know, so I had to walk 4 kilometers in the middle of the night. And I had to focus everything I had on and to trying to get back on my feet. So, you know, I didn't do anything for quite a while. A little let's see, I'm trying to think who it was. I did eventually get around to calling the Department of Washington, D.C. eventually.
Okay, so now at this point, you wrote a book, right? You have a book
Yeah,
that's out there.
yeah.
Now, is it published?
Yeah, it was just published a couple of days ago.
Okay, now what's in your book?
Oh, a lot of different stuff. Not so much on the Seth Rich. You know, I don't want people think that they're going to learn all this information because honestly, I just didn't know. And I still don't know a lot about, you know, that whole incident. I mean, it's
But this is still a big deal. The facts that you're giving us are a big deal. I mean, there's some pretty important things here. And I'm surprised, did Mueller or anybody contact you to interview you?
no, and you know what? I had. They've known. The FBI knows. I know they know
So
who I am.
how can they
And
claim that they're doing a legitimate investigation and then not talk to people like you or talk to
they're
you?
not legitimate.
What do you
In
think
fact,
they're? Go ahead.
when I called the Washington, D.C. police department, I spoke to the investigator in charge. And I said, hey, I'm a former cop, blah, blah, blah. I have information. I have possible information about the Seth Rich case, and you know what he did? He hung up on me.
He just hung up on you?
Hung up on me.
Didn't even say a
I talked.
word? Did he? Okay.
No. And I called back. I talked to the duty officer, and I said, "Oh, can you put me back to this detective?" And I thought maybe okay, we got disconnected, and it just went to his voicemail. And I called the duty officer back again. I was like, "You know what? You guys are a disgrace." And I went off on the duty officer. He's like, don't talk to me like that. And he put me through to the supervisor. And I spoke to the super, I got the supervisor's email address, voicemail. And I said, oh, my name's Don Dugan. Here's my contact information. If you guys are interested in hearing what I have, call me back. Nothing.
And they do.
I never got it.
Well,
no,
I think
I have a U.S.
Go ahead.
They can speak in Russia.
Well, I think this is a clear indication that their whole Russian gate and all this Russian stuff is a joke. I mean, it's just, this is an obvious example and why it needs to come to right. Because if they're not being serious about interviewing you, then they're not serious about anything that they're doing. Okay. Well, they are serious, but their agenda is not what they tell us it
yeah.
is.
Well, you know what? It's interesting because I've analyzed this a lot. And the only thing I can think is, as long as the government keeps telling people there's a big, bad boogeyman called Russia, the people are going to be throwing money at the government to protect them. I think it's all about maintaining power and maintaining their budget.
Yeah, there's.
I think
it's control
I think they
and other things. Yes.
Garbage.
Well, what else is in your book?
Growing up, everything that I exposed, like my whole fight with the sheriff. So
very interesting. Isn't there some more information on the nightclub massacre?
Well, there's a little. I don't know if you know this or not, but when the FBI was dedicating all these people to surveillance teams to follow me, this guy, what's his name? Homer Mateen, I think it was, right? He was in my county buying guns and bullets and body armor. And the FBI had the tip and they ignored it. They said they didn't have the manpower to investigate properly. Well, okay, yeah, they had 40 agents on a task force to figure out, you know.
They had 40 some agents against you, but didn't have the manpower to go get that tip.
Yeah.
You know, Kirk
yeah,
Wiebe.
You know, it was a short time.
Kirk Wiebe and
it was a short time. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
It was a short time afterwards that
He went and he killed 50-something people at that nightclub. It was a very short time after I came to Russia. They should have caught that guy.
You know, Kirk Wiebe and Bill Binney, I did a few interviews with them, and they said that the NSA has everything to stop these terrorist attacks. And, you know, the FBI gets that as well. And they use that data to surveil Americans and to keep their nefarious activities going. And
absolutely.
your situation is a perfect example of what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
they had
situation.
To get my login information from my social media accounts from somewhere. They didn't just hack in. So, and it turns out that there's that the sheriff's office in any law enforcement agency can actually write a letter to like Facebook and say, oh, we're investigating a matter of national security. We need his login information. And they will send it. They will send the username and password to get in.
Yeah, that should be illegal. They should have a warrant to get that information.
Absolutely.
Well, will you stay after and do an extra question for my patrons?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, I appreciate it. But before we get into that, can you tell them where they can get your book?
Yeah, sure. You can get it on Amazon. The book is called Bad Wolf, BadVolf. They can go to my website, which is badwolf.com, or to one of my whistleblower sites. You can go to psotalk.org.
Okay. I'll have all that information up there for people.
Oh, thanks.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for what you're doing and giving us this time today. I really appreciate
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I'm still doing whistleblower websites for people. You know, financially, I'm a little bit better off than I was. So, you know, if you guys, if any of your watchers have like, it's got to be a good cause. If they have a good cause and they need like an anonymous chat form or like a wiki site, you know, just all my contact information is on my website.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That's really brave
yeah.
and courageous work that you do.
Thanks. Nice.